Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And we are entering into winter.
Are we?
Yeah, well, today it feels more like winter.
I would say in Atlanta, we enter into winter sometime around mid-March, and then we exit it sometime around mid-March.
Yeah.
And then it's summer again until December, when fall begins.
Yeah, that's the way it was this last year. It basically stayed fall. Then it became spring, just enough for my fig tree to begin to emerge. And then it was winter again for like 3 days, enough to kill it.
This is really disrupting, I think, because you want to be able to have seasonal traditions, and you want them to be able to be reenacted with some kind of reliability every year. Seasonal traditions are something that I think gives a lot of anchoring meaning to our lives. When you're a little kid and you have that recognition that like, oh, Christmas is coming or something like that, whatever your traditions may be, if you don't celebrate Christmas, you probably have something like that sometime in the year that sort of like marks a seasonal transition and that a part of a season is based around. So like here in America, for kids who celebrate Christmas, winter is not just a cold time, it's Christmas time.
Yeah, yeah, it's almost impossible to escape the trappings of essentially Northern European winter survival traditions.
Yeah.
They've been, you know, they've been neutered and altered and changed into a different form altogether, but the shape is still there. Like the deep mythic importance of Santa Claus and Yule logs, all these various trappings, like their mythic purpose is still present if you just look hard enough.
Yeah, but you can also see that there's something kind of wrong with the way we practice Christmas here in Atlanta, Georgia. Because when I see all of the traditional aesthetic stuff that's associated with Christmas, it's all got snow on it. There's just snow on everything. Santa's walking around in the snow. He's got snow on him. He kind of looks like he's sort of made of snow. There is snow on all the Christmas trees you see in all the pictures and children playing in the snow. And it never snows on Christmas down here. It's usually in the 70s.
I think we got a white Christmas at some point in the last few years. But yeah, for the most part, you're right. The only way you're going to have snow on Christmas is if you import it or you have your tree flocked.
But yeah, to come back to the point I was making earlier, I think one reason this variable weather and the unreliability of it actually feeling like wintertime at Christmas is so troubling is that we really want to have dependable seasonal cycles that correspond to our ceremonies, mm-hmm. because our ceremonies make the seasons mean something. And it almost feels encoded into our bodies that the seasons should mean something. It shouldn't just be a time where the weather's a little different outside. It feels like seasons should mark something important in our existence.
Yeah, though it is hard. It is hard to backtrack because you can't just suddenly say, I'm sorry, kids, but a Christian saint is going to climb out of the hearth tonight and start bestowing gifts.
You know, if he's actually supposed to be based on Saint Nicholas, you should do yourself a favor and go look up some of the legends about the actual Saint Nicholas. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic. There's a great story where Saint Nicholas goes into an inn where there's an evil innkeeper who has, I guess he just didn't like children, so he took some boys and he killed them and he chopped them up and he pickled them in a big pot, and then St. Nicholas resurrects the chopped up pickled children.
Oh, man, that's wonderful.
That's the best resurrection story I've ever heard.
But it does drive home the inherent darkness of Christmas. When we talk about the commercialization and the modernization of holiday traditions, we're generally squeezing the darkness out of it. And that's why I feel like so many people have taken to, say, Krampus and other traditional yet dark elements of holiday and pagan tradition, because they represent the darkness that we're trying to get away from. And it ultimately is a dark time. It is about surviving the winter. It is about the cold moving in, about life draining from all of our vegetation, and we have to somehow stay warm and stay fed and live to see the spring.
Yeah, and it feels very possible that this could be something that's like, I don't know, almost kind of a Jungian archetype kind of thing, mm-hmm. a thing that's coded deep into the unconscious, that's some kind of received memory from biohistory. Because you look at how a lot of other animals deal with the winter, deal with the cold months, and they undergo profound changes beyond just the changes in how humans practice their culture when it gets cold.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the most iconic examples is, of course, the bear.
Oh, yeah.
And I was recently listening to Roaming Imagination, What the Stories We Tell About Bears Say About Us, on CBC Radio's Ideas with Paul Kennedy, one of my favorite podcast/radio programs.
Folks out there, you didn't get to hear it, but before we started, Robert was trying to do a Paul Kennedy impression.
Yeah, I sadly can't. I can nail a few impersonations, but I just can't quite capture Paul Kennedy's lovely voice.
You sound kind of like Optimus Prime when you do it.
Yeah, he's like a Canadian Optimus Prime, I would guess. But in this episode, they point out the mythic power of bears in many ancient northern traditions. Traditions that gave the bear a place of honor as a boundary walker between the human and the divine.
Mm.
Because when the cruel winter rolls in, threatening our survival and even our very sanity, the bear ventures into the earth only to emerge again in the spring.
Mm.
So it's like a resurrection, really.
Yeah.
So this is why you see shamans have in ancient societies taking on the guise of the holy bear. Norwegian traditions, for example, entailed grave shrouds of bear hide, appropriating the magical power of this animal that seeks and returns from the winter grave. In Finland, you have pre-Christian traditions that hold that bears can reincarnate. And the indigenous—
Wait, reincarnate as other bears or reincarnate as other types of creatures?
As bears, yeah. So
okay.
there is this cycle of the bear soul. Like the bear is following a different set of rules for life and death. And then there's the indigenous Ainu people of Japan that hold the bear as a god. But in an interesting twist, a god made flesh for their consumption and use. So
these are bear eating peoples?
Well, yeah. They eat the bear. They use the bear's hide. Mm-hmm. And they make products out of the bear. But there's this idea that the god that becomes the bear has become the bear so that they can use its flesh.
Oh, like a sacrificial, like, this is my bear body, take and eat.
Exactly, yeah. And then afterwards they hold a ceremony to return the bear god's spirit to the spirit realm. And of course, even today, bear hibernation, which is not a true hibernation, remains of interest to scientists, even in the consideration of future space travel.
Now, you say it's not a true hibernation. What would actually be the difference between this pseudo-hibernation we see in bears and a true hibernation?
Well, what bears do is certainly incredible, and we'll get to the details of that in a second. But true hibernation is even crazier. The Arctic ground squirrel, for instance, drops its body temperature below freezing, which is cold enough that neurons in the brain's cortex are physically incapable of firing.
So basically, it can put its brain on pause.
Yeah, basically. In Jason Biddle's Slate article, The Great Do Bears Hibernate Debate, he points to a wonderful 1832 experiment with torpid marmots. And it found that you could place these hibernating creatures in a glass container full of noxious gas, and they were unharmed so long as their body temperature didn't rise enough for them to emerge from hibernation.
So they could sort of freeze, and it's almost like they just cut themselves off from outside influence unless something like squishes them.
Yeah, yeah, as long as nothing comes in and messes with them during the hibernation.
Right. I guess you're always going to be vulnerable to getting squished.
Yeah, that's the risk of being a marmot. But in the case of hibernating bears, I mean, they fascinate us for a number of reasons, and a lot of it comes down to the fact that you have this rugged apex omnivore. So it's a bestial reflection of us in many respects. I mean,
right.
It can even walk on two legs when it needs to.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. All the ways that the bear mirrors the human. It can walk on two legs. It does eat both, you know, it's a total opportunist in mm-hmm. terms of diet. It can eat both plants and animals. And when it decides to eat animals, it is a formidable predator, just
yeah.
like humans. It seems like it's like the other thing like us out there. If you don't have great apes to compare yourself to,
yeah.
like if you're not in a place where there are chimpanzees or orangutans or gorillas, what's the closest thing to a human? Seems like it might be a bear.
Yeah. And I was running across various folkloric beliefs and myths that involve people turning to bears turning into people, the idea that bears are people who have wandered too far into the wilderness and they've been transformed by the magic of the wilderness.
Oh, it feels almost like Grendel. It's
yeah.
like the Earthrim roamer becomes a bear.
Yeah, and indeed, and this is an Earthrim roamer. In many of these traditions, it is ranging between life and death because it can essentially leapfrog over the coldest and cruelest months of the year. They quote-unquote hibernate. They cut their metabolic rate in half.
Yeah, so tell me about this pseudo-hibernation.
Okay, well, according to Edgar Folk of the University of Iowa, a late fall bear's heart beats 40 to 50 times a minute during sleep.
Okay.
But during deep hibernation, it slows to as few as 8 beats a minute. So during this time, they don't eat. Their body is stored up enough to provide them up to 4,000 calories a day during the winter. And the bear's body even takes urea, in urine, and builds new nitrogen from the protein. They don't defecate. They don't drink. And yet, when they wake in the spring, they're hydrated. They have a mm-hmm. balance of water in their bodies. And they also avoid muscle cramping and degenerative bone loss during this time, despite being just crammed up in a tiny space the whole time.
I feel like humans often use the metaphor of hibernation. Like we think, okay, it's wintertime. I'm going to spend a lot of time indoors with mm-hmm. my loved ones. We're going to cuddle up. I'm going to be under a blanket most of the time. But we don't really have anything like this
right.
to compare this experience to. This is just a different type of existence where you can go into this submetabolic state where you really do – it's not like you die and come back. I mean, metaphorically, it's kind of like that. But it is as if you become a different kind of organism for a significant part of the year. It's like you – it's almost like an animal sort of becomes a plant for this amount
yeah.
of time.
Yeah, becomes this sort of fleshy rock in the earth, and you can see why it captured the imaginations of people. Though it is interesting to try and imagine ancient peoples following the bear and finding out where the bear goes,
mm-hmm.
And what that discovery was like how they came to this realization that this formidable creature is climbing into the earth and just not emerging for months on end.
You can easily see, especially given what we've already said about it being in some cases kind of similar to a human, why this would take on a magical aspect to people.
Yeah. So in this episode, we're going to look at what we humans become during the winter. So obviously we don't experience anything like the bear or true hibernators, but the winter does have an effect on our bodies, on our minds, on our personality, and our culture.
And through culture, I think we have sometimes found ways to mirror the bear.
Now, obviously there are plenty of examples we could turn to for winter survival culture. But one of the most amazing is that of the Kwakwaka'wakw people.
Yeah, so the Kwakwaka'wakw is the name of a group of First Nations tribes that speak the Kwakwala language. And this is basically their home is the Pacific Northwest around Vancouver Island and stuff.
Yeah, and these various tribes have different names for themselves. But this is just the catch-all for their cultural system.
Yeah, the language group.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, the Field Museum in Chicago, they have an excellent section on the art and culture of various Native American tribes, including this one. And Joe, you and I both visited this during a 2017 visit.
Yeah, that is a fantastic collection. And these artworks and ceremonial artifacts are just beautiful if you ever get a chance to see it. But also, if you get a chance, you should check out the Umista Cultural Center of British Columbia, which is run by the Umista Cultural Society. And that's a Kwakwaka'wakw run center dedicated to preserving the cultural heritage and the traditional artifacts of the Kwakwaka'wakw people.
Yeah, and I'll include a link to that organization on the landing page for this episode at stufftoblowyourmind.com. So for the Kwakwaka'wakw people, summer is a time of travel, gathering of foods, preservation of foods for the winter. Because when winter comes, which runs November through March, it is a harsh time. But it's also a sacred time. And during this time, the people are visited by supernatural spirits. Everyone takes different names and are defined more by their membership in these different dance societies, each based on a different supernatural entity. And so these societies, they even take precedence over clan affiliation. It basically divides their world up into two phases. You have the summer, which is Baksas, and then there's winter, which is Setsequa, which has been translated as secrets.
This is a really fascinating aspect of this culture because it takes something that, as we were saying earlier, in some ways is kind of subtly or implicitly present in many other cultures, like the way we sort of change according to the seasons, but it makes it more explicit.
Yeah.
And sort of commits the people within the culture to say, yes, we are different beings when the cold months arrive.
Yeah, because it's one thing to think, well, you know, Joe is a slightly different person during the winter. Mm-hmm. But if you were to actually change your name, if you were to distinguish between Summer Joe and Winter Joe and like sign things as Winter Joe.
And have, you know,
That would be a different case altogether.
And have different intra-society associations.
Yes. Yeah. So in other words, for the Kwakwaka'wakw people, all cultural energy shifts from harvesting food to a four-month ritual cycle aimed at taming cosmos-threatening supernatural forces. While the rule of summer is a hierarchy based on mythical founding ancestors, Setsequa is all about the dance groups. And I have a wonderful quote here I want to read that I think underlines a lot of this. This is from a paper titled, "It is a strict law that bids us dance, cosmologies, colonialism, death, and ritual authority in the Kwakwaka'wakw potlatch, 1849 to 1922 by Joseph Masco, published in Comparative Studies in Society and History. In total, the seasons present a ritual cycle which deconstructs and reinvents the social order. The barren winter months in which the collective spiritual energy of all the tribes must be focused on regenerating the natural world are turned into a fecundity of the summer months, when the animal world, placated by continuing ritual, offers itself up for human consumption. Thus, the Kwakwaka'wakw saw themselves as participants in a universal ecology requiring continuous maintenance. Its root metaphor was that of hunter and hunted. To live means to kill." Now, to give you an example of some of the dance groups, the affiliations that one is associated with during the winter, there is the Hamasta or Cannibal Society. And they're defined by the myth of four brothers who ventured into the home of the cannibal spirit at the, quote, north end of the world, which I can't help but think of Santa when we touch on that. But here, the cannibal spirit lived with a man-eating raven called Crooked Beak of Heaven and a giant bird who cracked open human skulls with its beak and ate the brains. The brothers end up defeating all of these creatures, and they gain special powers. So to join the society, you had to undergo an ordeal in which the cannibal spirit kidnaps you, takes you into the woods, and when you return to the tribe, you're possessed like a wild man. You're dressed only in scraps of hemlock, you're dancing about in a squatting position, and the others have to entice you to venture close to the fire with either a corpse or a corpse-like figure.
Whoa.
Yeah, so you're lunging at people, you're biting at people, you're even actually biting pre-selected people.
So this is like a choreographed thing.
Yeah, well, I wonder to what extent it's like choreographed, maybe with a bit of improv. You know, it's theater. It's essentially, well, to call it theater is probably not giving it enough depth, because it is a most potent form of theater.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a performance for an audience, but it's an enactment.
Yes, an enactment for the people and for the cosmos.
Yeah.
It is a magical ceremony. Finally, an attendant leads you around the fire by a neck ring, pacifying you with music four times around the fire, and then you climb through a hole in a ceremonial screen, and you reappear in the mask of the man-eating raven. Then you reappear maskless, and then as the crooked beak of heaven, and finally you return for a fifth dance, fully tamed, and dance in an upright position.
Wow.
So we see this, like, this transformation, this taming of the wild. And it also touches on this idea of the cannibal spirit, which you see present in a number of different native people's folk beliefs, probably most famous and typified in the Wendigo. In addition to this, you have the Grizzly Bear Society that keeps order during the ceremony, sometimes even punishing transgressions with death. And during some of the dances, you see them wearing full bear skins and behaving as bears. You have fool dancers who run around causing chaos. And then you have the Wild Woman of the Woods.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah, because this one, she appears as a person clad in bear skins and a horrid mask, and she carries a basket, which she uses to crate away children who've wandered into the woods so that she can eat them.
I detect some parallels to Krampus.
Yeah, I mean, both of these are the wild child-eating creature that serves as a warning to naughty children during the winter.
So on one hand, my reaction to this is strong in that I not only find this very, like, aesthetically pleasing and beautiful, but also I detect a kind of deep genius in it, if that makes any sense. There's something profound that the practitioners of these ceremonies have tapped into about our nature as human beings that a lot of us have not quite figured out how to properly animate.
Yeah, yeah. I love how revealing this example feels, even for denizens of the modern world. You know, we're so technologically aided in our battle against winter. We have heated homes. We have all the electricity we can use. We have fresh water. We can even have fresh vegetables delivered right to our door. And yet this still strikes a chord of truth for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Because no matter how many space heaters you surround yourself with, and no matter how much you have access to unholy summer foods out of season in the winter, and folks, I should just say, don't buy tomatoes in the winter. Just don't do it. Don't encourage that.
Oh, but what if you need spaghetti? Spaghetti's such a...
Use canned tomatoes. Well, yeah, they were true. Canned in the summer. That's okay.
That's right. I mean, that's the spirit of surviving the winter, is use the canned goods, use the survival foods. Eat the pickles.
Yeah.
As long as they're not made from children, obviously.
Wait, where was I going with that? Well, no, anyway, so, no matter, just like you say, no matter how much we can use technology to ward off some of the worst effects of seasonal changes, whether it's actually winter or hot summer months, or if you live in tropical areas, whether it's the rainy season, you might be able to technologically put yourself into a state of stability, you know, indoors with all of this electrical equipment. But we sort of can't write seasonal changes out of our DNA, things like the winter, the rainy season, you know, whatever these seasonal changes are that are relevant wherever you live. They're a deep part of us that is not going to dissipate just because we've got climate control.
That's right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will begin to explore the winter changes to the human body. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. AstaproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back.
All right, so we've talked about rituals that reimagine the person as sort of a different type of being living in a different type of cosmic significance regime within the seasonal changes, like within the winter versus the summer. But there are many ways in which our bodies are very, you might say, very finely and delicately sensitive to seasonal changes.
Right, yeah, and this is – in this area of the discussion, we're going to get into some areas here where there's no question that the winter has an effect on the body. So for starters, we're creatures who evolved to thrive in the sun. So you can expect some firm biological reasons that you would need to, say, catch a few rays, right? Even as the rays become rarer in the colder months.
Now, Robert, I know you can tell me good reasons we shouldn't extinguish the sun. There are some days, especially here in our office, where in the wintertime, in the afternoon, the sun comes around and comes just through the window in such a way that I am an ant under a magnifying glass at my desk, and like my screens just turn into a tunnel of white light into death where I can't see anything for the glare. And I have at those times said, I want to extinguish the sun. Can we find a way to do it? Just put it out. But that's probably a bad idea, right?
I would advise against that. For starters, it does light and heat and sustain the world.
Yeah.
But then there's also vitamin D to consider.
Okay.
So vitamin D, this is a fat-soluble nutrient that our bodies need to absorb calcium and phosphorus, both of which are central to the development of strong bones. Now, we can get vitamin D from oily fish, from fortified milk, but for the most part, you're going to need the sun to get your vitamin D.
Okay.
Or supplements. But when we get into the subject of supplements, that's where things get surprisingly sticky. And I have to admit, I really was not up on all of this till I read an article by Gina Colata in the New York Times titled, Why Are So Many People Popping Vitamin D?
Because it tastes so good.
Well, maybe. But basically the situation here is that about a decade ago, some doctors became concerned about potential vitamin D deficiency in people enduring far northern climates.
Hmm.
People such as Dr. Michael F. Holick, a professor of medicine, physiology, and biophysics at Boston University School of Medicine, advocated the importance of vitamin D supplements based on what seemed to be an association between low vitamin D levels and higher rates of various diseases. The idea was that vitamin D levels were lower but considered normal back in early 2000s might be linked to multiple sclerosis and mental illness as well as cancer risk and bone health.
Wow. I mean, those are some wide-ranging effects.
Yeah. So the recommended daily allowance is currently set at 600 international units up to age 70 and 800 international units for people who are older. And as Colata points out, this would require near constant exposure to sunlight.
Well, that doesn't sound practical.
Especially during the winter, right? Where there is literally less sunlight to go around, and you can couple that with the possibility that you're huddling inside of a cave or at least a very nice heated apartment or home.
Now, one thing I guess we should go ahead and say right here, it probably would have come up at some point, but we don't want to encourage Northern Hemisphere bias. So we should mention that the winter is not just, say, December, January, February. The winter is affected by what hemisphere you dwell in, right?
Right.
So it's about the tilt of the Earth and the amount of direct sunlight that you're receiving at your latitude on the Earth. So the winter months for the Northern Hemisphere, the summer months for the Southern Hemisphere, and vice versa. Both hemispheres will get a summer and a winter unless you're near the equator. But yeah, so there you go.
As Colata explores, small studies and even larger ones, however, have failed to support a link between vitamin D and the prevention of heart attacks, cancer, and strokes. Yet vitamin D supplements remain big business, but there's been some pushback against the notion that they provide a true measurable medical boost. Nor, they say, is there good reason for people without osteoporosis or vitamin D absorption interfering conditions to undergo regular tests for vitamin D.
Huh.
Now, that's not to say vitamin D deficiency isn't a problem, especially in utero and during early childhood. It can result in rickets, which is a defective mineralization or calcification of bones in growing bodies. And this is still a problem in the developing world. It can cause skeletal growth retardation, skeletal deformities, and increase the risk of hip fractures in later life. This last bit, according to Dr. Michael F. Holick, who I referenced earlier. Holick is an author that comes up time and time again in these various studies about vitamin D deficiency.
Man, I feel like vitamin supplements is one of those incredibly controversial issues that I can never really get a settled opinion on. And it's something I've read about multiple times, but I read people saying, yeah, take them. No, don't take them. Yeah, no, you should take them. No, they don't do anything.
Yeah, I feel like especially for a lot of us who grew up, you know, being preached at, sometimes by Hulk Hogan himself,
yeah,
on the importance of taking our vitamins, it's this weird revelation to realize that, well, actually, the science isn't 100% solid on the necessity of some of these vitamins.
Well, it's not. I think it's not the vitamins themselves, right?
But it's the supplement
form.
Because there's no denying that vitamin D is important to the human body.
Yeah.
What the sticking point is: to what extent do we need to be taking supplements, or does the average person need to take supplements to make up for what you're perhaps not getting from the sun? Now, there's still a lot of research out there on the degree to which vitamin D via supplements and fortification is important to human health. And I mean, there is a lot of research in this area, and perhaps it's something we'll have to circle back around to in the future. But here's just a taste of some of the recent studies.
Okay.
2017, here are just a few. Vitamin D linked with better live birth rates in women undergoing assisted reproduction.
Okay.
Vitamin D may be simple treatment to enhance burn healing.
Huh.
Vitamin D supplements could help pain management.
Huh.
Vitamin D deficiency increases risk of chronic headache. And then here's a 2016 when increasing nursing mothers' vitamin D levels may benefit babies.
As I said earlier, apparently wide-ranging effects. I'm always kind of curious about stuff that seems to have effects so broad.
Yeah.
Not to say I doubt the research. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot to be learned about how important nutrients like this are.
Now, interestingly enough, a number of the studies have come out of Finland, a northern European country known for its cold winters and, of course, its sauna dependency.
You know, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, if you've got a deficiency of sunlight, this seems like a thing very much worth studying.
Yeah. And this, among the studies, there was a large-scale 2017 study published in Urology that finds women with low levels of vitamin D in their blood are more likely to develop multiple sclerosis later in life. Still, as Gina Collada drives home in a New York Times article, there has never been widely accepted evidence that vitamin D is helpful in preventing or treating depression, fatigue, muscle weakness, or even heart disease or cancer.
Huh. Sounds like we got a lot of question marks.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, I feel like you kind of leave this section perhaps with more questions than answers.
I feel like that happens almost any time we get into nutrition. Nutrition is just one of the thorniest subjects out there. And whenever it comes down to what nutrient really does prevent X, Y, or Z or cause X, Y, or Z, you think you know something, but then there are a lot more question marks.
Yeah. But still, undeniably, we can say we need vitamin D.
Yeah.
We get a lot of it from the sun.
Yeah.
And there is less sunlight in the winter.
Yes.
So do with that information what you will. All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
All right, we're back. Now, another area of consideration is the effect of sunlight on melatonin. And I'm sure everyone has at least some familiarity with what we're talking about here, seasonal affective disorder.
Oh, really? So I've actually wondered about this before, because I've wondered if I have some mild form of this, but that also led me to do a little reading on it. And I know some people would allege that this is not really a real or distinct condition. Now, of course, there are mood disorders, mm-hmm. and some people might experience them more often in winter months. But is this a distinct disorder of its own?
Yeah, this is another area with a fair amount of conflict in it. And yet at the same time, I'm like you. I can't help but think about the winter, especially when I'm in the winter, and ask myself, well, am I feeling a bit blue today because it's cold out?
Yeah.
Is it do I have some level of seasonal affective disorder?
Yeah, then again, I mean, when you do that, you run the risk of blowing out of proportion or self-medicalizing.
Yeah.
Sort of basically normal levels of mood fluctuation. Like, I might feel a lot more down in the winter, especially it does seem to be somewhat seasonally related, because I feel it especially in the afternoon when I notice the sun is very low, very early in the afternoon. That's mm-hmm. sort of the visual and sensory trigger for it. I start to feel the doom creeping in, but I don't want to get carried away and start thinking, oh yeah, I've got a disorder. I've got a mood disorder.
Yeah. Well, but one of the interesting things is that on one level you can say, oh, well, Joe sees the approaching darkness and is frightened by the terror of night.
It may just be that I suddenly have insight in the truth is that doom is always creeping in.
Well, but the other side of it is your body has insight. As we're going to discuss here, like the perception of darkness and light is taking place at a far subconscious level, mm-hmm. At a bodily level. So the pineal gland secretes melatonin. This is a hormone that communicates information about environmental lighting to various parts of the body. Mm. It's especially key to biological rhythms, and the duration of melatonin secretion each day is directly proportional to the length of the night.
Okay. So this, for just one thing among many, probably helps to deal with our sleep cycles. Our body needs to know when it's time to sleep, right?
Exactly. So naturally, shorter days mean less melatonin. And this kind of decrease in melatonin is often linked to seasonal affective disorder, which, just to define it more clearly, is seen as a mood disorder subset that sees otherwise mentally healthy individuals experience a mood dip during the winter. It affects women more than men, and theories regarding its cause also include a drop in serotonin levels due to reduced sunlight, as well as disrupted circadian rhythm. At any rate, rates of seasonal affective disorder do seem to increase the farther you move away from the equator. So this is how the National Institutes of Mental Health currently defines it. Seasonal affective disorder is not considered as a separate disorder. It is a type of depression displaying a recurring seasonal pattern. To be diagnosed with seasonal affective disorder, people must meet full criteria for major depression, coinciding with specific seasons appearing in the winter or summer months, interestingly enough, for at least 2 years. Seasonal depressions must be much more frequent than any non-seasonal depressions. And the full range of symptoms include low energy, hypersomnia, overeating, weight gain, craving for carbohydrates, and, of course, social withdrawal, which some people say feels like hibernating.
Now, I'm sure some people would just say rather cheekily, like, well, you just described my personality. You know, that is who I am. But I think what we're talking about here is, like, these symptoms to a level that it causes problems in your life.
Now, seasonal affective disorder has always been somewhat divisive. It's only been recognized as a condition since the late 1990s, and not everyone agrees that it's a full-fledged disorder. A 2016 study headed up by Dr. Stephen Lobello, a professor of psychology at Auburn University at Montgomery, found that, quote, the prevalence of depression is very stable across different latitudes, seasons of the year, and sunlight exposures. And in getting to this point, the researchers examined data from 34,294 participants age 18 to 99 who took part in a phone survey about their health through 2006.
Okay, so this would seem to contrast with what you said earlier, which was that at least it had been alleged that the rates of seasonal affective disorder type symptoms were reported more at higher latitudes.
Right. Yeah, this would seem to fly in the face of that.
Okay.
On the other hand, however, a recent Northwestern Medicine study found that daily exposure to bright white light at midday significantly decreased symptoms of depression and increased functioning in people with bipolar disorder. And previous studies have found morning bright light therapy reduced symptoms of depression in patients with seasonal affective disorder.
You know, one thing I'm taking away from this is yet another situation where once you try to nail down exactly what this condition is and, you know, you medicalize it and you put it in scientific terminology, it does seem to get a little fuzzy maybe.
Right.
But there's no denying that there's something people are experiencing, whether or not it fits the medical definition of the disorder as established. People anecdotally report things like this enough that you know at least people are feeling something.
Right. I think it's undeniable that winter can impact one's existing emotional state.
Yeah.
And sometimes that impact is sufficient enough to where it seems to be an actual psychological condition.
Now, here's another weird thing about the way our bodies change with the seasons. It is not just vitamin D deficiency or mood changes that can be caused by the winter months, but you actually see a pretty stark increase in the risk of mortality from certain diseases during winter.
That's right. There is something that's referred to as winter cardiovascular diseases phenomenon, because there does seem to be a seasonal trend of cardiovascular diseases, and these range from venous thrombosis to sudden cardiac death, with the highest incidences occurring during the colder winter months.
Now, there could be a lot of reasons for that, right? That's one of those things where you say, okay, we're correlating two variables here, you know, this cardiovascular disease death and the winter months, and it might not necessarily be the winter conditions itself that causes it, but they do appear to be correlated.
Yes. Now, in a lighter note, there is something that's also referred to as cuffing season. Were you familiar with this?
No, I wasn't. I went and read the article. I mean, this is pretty funny. Why do they call it cuffing? I don't know. Where's that term come from?
It comes from it's handcuffing. So there's a How Stuff Works article about this that came out last year.
I understand it's from handcuffing.
Yes. But you want to handcuff yourself to another person. It's like, it is cold. I am lonely. I need to find somebody to shackle myself to so that we may survive the winter together.
It's the season of that movie Fled.
Yeah, it is kind of like Fled. The idea here is that to get through the winter, you need to find somebody. You want into a warming relationship, and there may be a biological reason behind it all. According to biochemist Dr. Jennifer Stagg, it may be coded into our DNA. So in the fall, genes get turned on that result in changes in both hormones and neurotransmitters that may be responsible for driving us to pair up. Plus, you have testosterone levels in men. They appear to be lowest during times of warmer weather and longer daylight. Peak testosterone occurs around October, November, but elevation is seen throughout the winter months.
Hmm.
So there seems to be a winter drive to pair up, a winter drive to mate.
Yeah, and this apparently is not just a tiny uptick, like as measured by dating apps and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. One of the figures was that apparently OkCupid reports about a 30% increase in love-seeking activity during winter. I mean, you can't deny almost a third more loving.
Yeah, that is a lot more loving, winter loving.
Now, one of the things you mentioned as a possible symptom outlined by NIM for seasonal affective disorder is cravings for carbohydrates.
Yes.
That immediately made me think of our Thanksgiving and Christmas feasting traditions.
Yeah, exactly. What do we all inevitably do around Thanksgiving but like just stuff ourselves with all of these fatty, rich foods?
Mm-hmm.
And it also, like anecdotally, makes me think of teleworking, working from home during the fall or winter, where I seem to just inevitably just turn the house upside down to find various things to spread peanut butter on. Like I feel like my work is disrupted by this constant rummaging for food.
Okay, now I got to put you on the spot. What's the weirdest thing you've ever put peanut butter on?
Ooh.
Lego spaceship?
nothing so exotic. Probably something salty. Okay. Potato chip or something, you know.
We're done. Peanut butter on beef jerky.
Oh gosh, no, that's pretty bad. Have you?
No. How about peanut butter on a lemon?
Oh no, I haven't done that. But you almost get to that point. Like, yeah. Luckily, you reach the point where you just eat it off a spoon, I think, before you get to the point where you're spreading it on things that are too horrible. But as you might expect, there have been some studies that have looked at this, at the idea of there being a slightly different winter diet for humans.
Uh-huh.
Some studies have observed seasonal rhythms to human diet, which shouldn't come as a surprise. A 1991 study in physiology and behavior marked, quote, an increased total caloric intake, especially of carbohydrate, in the fall associated with an increase in meal size and a greater rate of eating.
Rate of eating. It's like a D&D stat.
Yeah, a 10% boost in eating. You can boost your eating stat for the month. Now, specifically, the researchers found that subjects were hungrier at the end of their meals, perhaps due to a suppression of satiation mechanisms.
Okay, so it's not necessarily that you want to eat more at the beginning, but you start eating and it's a longer time before you actually feel full.
Yeah, it just takes longer to reach that point where you are full or stuffed.
Mm-hmm.
They argue that this could be an evolved adaptation that remains with us even in this, you know, ultimately evolutionarily brief age of artificial heating and light.
Right. Well, we obviously think about the bear who feasts before going into hibernation so that they can have that that stored up fat for the 4,000 calories a day even while hibernating.
Yeah, it does seem to be the sort of the shadow of the bear, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Where we're kind of mirroring its behavior. Eat as much as you can while the food still remains plentiful in order to shore up for the months of winter ahead. Oh, and by the way, there was actually a recent 2017 study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and they explored the idea that obesity as an epidemic might also be due in large part to a circadian disorder.
I think I've heard hints of this before, mm-hmm. like that it, that stuff about metabolic disorders could be related to like sleep schedules and things like that.
Yeah, I guess through all of this, I'm reminded that humans, like all animals, are not just creatures that live within summer or live within winter, but they live ultimately in some sort of sync with their natural environments. You know, we're not immune to changes in the degree of sunlight that we're receiving and the warmth of the world or the availability of resources. And we've evolved to thrive amid this seasonal flow.
Okay, so we're going to have to wrap it up there for the first part of our discussion about the seasonal changes that warp and command our lives. But we had a lot to say about this, so we're going to be back next time with part two of this conversation when we'll discuss more about the winter beings we become.
In the meantime, you can find all the episodes of the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast at stufftoblowyourmind.com, along with blog posts, videos, and links out to our various social media accounts such as Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and so forth. And hey, if you do seek us out on Facebook, well then look for our Facebook group, the Stuff to Blow Your Mind discussion module. That's a wonderful place where you sign up and you can discuss episodes or things you would like to become episodes with other listeners to the show, as well as Joe and I as well.
It's a great place. It gets weird in there, but it's always so nice.
Indeed.
And if you want to get in touch with us directly, as always, you can email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.